Thank you. So, yes, I'm Catherine Davis, and this is a project with some other people from Kansas State University looking at the multi-species cover crop component of cover crops. And so we're all at a cover crop meeting, so you all know cover crop is something planted for the purpose of soil health in between when a regular crop would be, cash crop would be covering the soil surface. And in Kansas, there's a lot of interest in cover crops. Obviously, we had a full room earlier today. But in Kansas, from the latest data we have from the 2012 Census of Ag, of the 21 million acres of cropland harvested each year, only about 1.5% of those are using cover crops. So there's a lot of interest in cover crops, but there's a fairly low adoption rate. And one of the reasons that there might be a low adoption rate could be related to the cost involved in establishing and terminating the cover crops, like seeding cost, labor, equipment, getting that cover crop planted, and then also the termination and making sure that that is terminated in a timely fashion and that cover crop does not become a weed in future cropping seasons. This is some data from the SARE survey last year where it addressed asking farmers who are using cover crops what are the top reasons why they're using cover crops. And the top four were related to increasing soil health and reducing erosion, but fairly high up on that list is grazing. So there are a lot of people who are using cover crops who might also have cows and want to use that cover crop as a supplemental forage. And in this region, nearly a quarter of the U.S. red meat is produced in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. And many cover crop species are also excellent quality forage species, so grazing a cover crop might allow those costs associated with the establishment and termination of the cover crop to then be recovered in another way. So there's many objectives to the study, but the three I'm going to talk about today would be: what is the species composition resulting from a multi-species cover crop? And then within the different types of species, which one yielded the greatest? And then whether or not a legume affects the forage quality. So the site location is far southeast corner of Kansas. And for those of you who may not be from Kansas and might think of it as a dry state, there's a huge precipitation gradient going across the state. Some places in far western Kansas receive only 13 to 14 inches of rainfall a year. This particular location receives 45 inches of rainfall a year, so quite a bit of adequate moisture. And also, being that far south, it's closer to a southwest Missouri and northwest Arkansas type of a growing season. So it's a little warmer than a northern Kansas location. So it's on a silt loam soil and randomized complete block design with a statistical analysis with the mean separated at 0.05. So timeline for this project, these were planted in the middle of August following a summer fallow. And then at 45, 74, and 91 days, an area of a third of a square meter was clipped to collect the biomass from the plot. So treatment combinations. This was a factorial design with one plant species representing each of the three main categories. So from the Brassicaceae family, either a turnip or a radish, and from the grass family, the Poaceae family, the either wheat, rye, barley, or oat, and then for a legume, either a winter pea or a Brassine clover. So each of the 16 mixtures were a three-way combination representing all of these species. And this is what the plots looked like at 45 days in 2014. This plot has turnips along with cereal rye, and then you may not be able to see it from the picture, but if you look across that field, you can see the other plots were in strips, and there's some of them are more dominant grasses, some have more brassicas growing in there. And then, so the area was clipped, the biomass was brought back to the lab, and all jumbled together. That was sorted out into the individual species, and they were each weighed to determine species composition. And of course, they were then dried and ground to determine forage quality. So the biomass composition. These were all planted using what some people call the replacement method, where there's a three-way mix. So we planted a third of what the recommended seeding rate would be for each of the species. So you would think that you would end up with an even third on the composition. But what we actually got was in 2014 at 45 days, and these numbers are averaged across all 16 treatments, but the brassica was by far the dominant species at 82%, and the legume was only 2% of the total biomass. At 74 days, that biomass had doubled. The brassica was still dominant at 70%. And then at 91 days, the biomass actually decreased a little bit overall, and the composition shifted a little bit, but the legume stayed constant at only 2% of the biomass. 2015 is a little bit of a different story, where at 45 days, the overall biomass was less, 2015 is different, where the overall biomass was less than 2014, and the brassicas were only at 14% of the total species composition, where the grasses were a much larger component and much larger representation by the legume. And then at 74 days, that biomass had doubled, but the composition percent stayed relatively the same. And at 91 days, it went up by another 900 kilograms per hectare, and that composition still stayed fairly simple. Fairly constant. So why was the biomass different in the 2 years? Well, precipitation might play a huge role in that, as we all know from our on-farm research, and that, you know, with agronomy, it changes every year. And so this is the average rainfall, and put against 2014, for the growing season, these were planted the middle of August, and in September and October, there was plenty of rainfall in 2014. However, in 2015, there was a very different story with the wetter July and August, followed by a drier September and October. And that may have allowed a competitive advantage for the brassicas in 2014 to do better with more water, compared to the grasses may have done better with less water. Another difference between the 2 years in temperature is that in 2014 following planting, 2014 is shown in the blue, it was relatively warm, and in 2015, following planting, we had a cold snap, and it was fairly cool, and that may have affected germination and emergence. And at 91 days in 2014, the overall biomass had decreased, and that might be because it had frozen just prior to clipping those, and the radishes were wilted, whereas in 2015, everything was still alive and growing when they were clipped at 91 days. So now between the individual species. So you're going to plant a cereal grass. Which is better between wheat, barley, rye, and oat? And a lot of this is going to be dependent on where you are location-wise. So in these mixes at this location planted for a fall grazing, in 2014, the barley and oat produced the greatest amount of biomass with no difference between wheat and rye. And then in 2015, the oat produced the greatest, followed by barley, and then there was no difference between wheat and rye as far as overall biomass was concerned. And these are all taken from the 74-day clipping in two different years. In between the brassicas, in 2014 there was a difference between the radish and the turnip, where radish produced more than the turnip, and then in 2015 there was no difference between the two different species as far as statistical difference in the biomass. And then between the legume species in 2014, keeping in mind the total legume was about 2% of the species composition, winter pea produced a little bit and clover produced nothing. And in 2015, the winter pea produced substantially more, about 24% of the overall biomass came from legumes, but the verseme clover was not competitive in these mixes and it did not establish well. So another component of the study would be asking, does adding a legume influence forage properties? So with legumes being able to fix nitrogen, the assumption would be that by putting a legume in your mixture, you would increase the crude protein content of the forage and therefore have better cattle gains. Well, this is a quality standards guide taken from the Southern Forages book, just to give us a guideline for what would be considered good quality hay. So if crude protein is above 19% and your fiber content is below acid-type fiber, detergent fiber below 31%, and the neutral detergent fiber below 40%, that would be considered a prime quality hay. And since I know a lot of you are probably not animal scientist people, in general, you want protein higher, you want fiber to be lower, because the higher the fiber is, the less digestible the forage is going to be. But some fiber is needed in the diet. So since the clover didn't grow, that provided the opportunity to compare a two-way mixture, which would be a brassica and grass species, with a three-way mixture, which would be a brassica, grass, and a winter pea. And the example I'm going to show you is from the 74-day in 2015 forage quality, where the pea was 20% of the overall biomass. And on the y-axis, on the first column, I have the crude protein percent, acid detergent fiber, and neutral detergent fiber. And then the second column, I've got the prime hay quality factors from the previous table. So in 2015, 74-day clipping, all of these combinations would be considered prime quality hay, but there was not a difference in the crude protein or fiber between whether or not there was a legume or not. Now, that's not to say that there wouldn't have been a difference if this was clipped later in the fall or maybe into the spring, but having planted it in the middle of August and then clipping it 74 days later, there wasn't a difference. So conclusions of that would be that careful selection of species and seeding rates is important. I know other people have done studies looking at maybe instead of doing a third of a seeding rate, doing like 60% legume with different combinations of that, just looking at maybe the competitiveness of the individual species rather than the overall, rather than like being looking at mathematically, looking at more of the biology and how competitive are they going to be and mixing those together in that way. And also the species expression varied vastly each year, which is likely due to the weather. So with mixes, some people want to optimize a mix by planting the optimum mix for that area, but one of the benefits of a mixture could be that whatever would be optimum for that year is probably what's going to grow and be more competitive. So you'll have more higher chance that you'll have something grow than nothing. And the biomass changed different, each was different each year. And again, during the fall vegetative growth, the legume didn't increase the total biomass or the forage quality. So I would like to thank my funding agency. And again, if you have questions about how the money goes into this, I have another talk on Wednesday in the next room over addressing the economics of the same project. So with that, I'll take questions.
Do we have some time for questions?
Yes.
You know, despite of all the benefits that are associated with the cover crops, we're dealing with that uncertainty that we have year to year. Do you have any suggestion for reducing that uncertainty that we have in terms of the establishment and yield? And in your case, the mixture that we have, the ratio between those mixtures, is there any suggestion to kind of reduce that risk for the growers?
So the question was, is there a way to reduce the risk to growers when planting a cover crop? And, I mean, that's part of agriculture. You're always going to have risk. You're always going to have different weather patterns. So, and I think a lot of this comes down to individual farmers. There's not one size fits all cover crop that works for every situation. So knowing your area and no, you can't plan for everything. And everything doesn't always work the way the textbook says it should. But adapting, and don't plant bursting clover in southeast Kansas. I'm not saying bursting clover is a horrible forage, but it's not good for southeast Kansas, at least in these mixes. It might be good by itself. And it might be good planted other times of the year, too. So, and I think the cereal rye, everybody loves cereal rye. I think it was planted too early in this location because this is farther south and it's more warm. And I think it would have been better, probably done better if it had been planted middle of September or end of September. Is that answer? Okay.
That's all we have time for.
Okay.